Teta koto te whānau o Auckland Unitarians. Teta koto nā manuhiri, no mai, haere mai. Ki te e hui a te raha nei. Haere mai ki te kopapa o te ra. Ko klei, toku e goa. Teta koto. Teia tato, teia tato katoa. Welcome, all of you. It's nice to see you. We've been away, but it's always good to be home. So welcome all, church whānau, and visitors to this place of worship. Virtual and physical, made sacred by Auckland Unitarians for 122 years. Welcome to those of us joining us remotely, and to those here in the building, and to those watching the recording at a later time. For those here in person, you are all invited to join us for a cuppa after our service. It is our sacrament of hospitality. My opening words are by Gretchen Haley and myself. Today, God is running late. May I call you God? Just for convenience's sake? We know you are not a celestial being divorced from who we are. You are a complex metaphor for the spirit of life, mystery, and of course, love. In your silence, I choose to hear permission. So as I was saying, today God is running late. Trying to find their seat, scanning the room for someone they know, or someone they don't, God's feeling evangelical. But not in a judging way. Mysterious, but not manipulative. God can't stop thinking about that James Webb telescope and the possibility that time is not linear, which God might have guessed from the never-ending urgency of some upcoming election. And when did Halloween sweets show up at the supermarket? Easter? God is tired. Tired of grief and white supremacy and the warming of the oceans. Not to mention, they usually come to the later service, and it's hot. Why hasn't the climate-friendly air conditioning been installed yet, God wonders? And of course, we're all like, no kidding. God, can't you do something about that? But God's hearing aid batteries ran out. And they haven't had time to order more. Or that's what they say when asked, and can hear the question. But really, that last emergency room visit during their recent trip to America maxed out their credit cards, and their partners have been posting online for crowdfunding for some extra cash. But give a little, it's just not enough. And really, God just wants to be present. Stop worrying about everything. Sing, breathe, laugh. We got you, God, we say. We'll settle in, and we'll be present, and we'll sing. We'll tell stories and breathe deep. We'll remember ourselves and offer whole galaxies of gratitude for all this beauty, for those peons of spring, daffodils and blooming magnolias, for protest letters, entire villages of people saying, you are safe here, God. Your creation is not done yet. Creating you. Come. Let us worship together. Here we are, together again to light the challenge. Each facing our different human tasks, or maybe the same central one, to embrace the lessons life delivers, to discern and respond as we grow, to refuse harm and cherish flourishing. May we know ourselves as vessels of infinite possibility, holders of each other's heartaches and tales of joy alike, weavers of one story in which we each have our part. Now, please join with me in saying the covenant of our church. Love is the doctrine of this church. The quest for truth is the sacrament, and service is prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge and freedom, to serve humankind and fellowship, to the end that all souls shall grow in harmony with each other and with our God. And now, some special music by Sudan.
Yes, I'm going to play the trio section of Pomp and Circumstance March number 1.
Thank you.
Here is a factoid about your minister I hope to have kept from you for 9 years. In secondary school, I was a band nerd. Nerd. N-E-R-D. I wasn't the cool one, played the sexy alto sax like I wanted. Instead, I was consigned over my objection to play the tuba.
Oh, I love the tuba.
I heard that. That's cool. It was even more humiliating, as I was the smallest guy in the band. What triggered this suppressed memory was the suggestion that I give a valedictory as I ease out of my role. It sounded reasonable a month ago, but now, not so much. In America, the role of valedictorian at the graduation ceremony is given to the student with the best academic record. I only qualified once at seminary, and my seminary didn't have a valedictorian. They knew that being smart didn't mean you were good at public speaking. Instead, the top three preachers in the class, as selected by the faculty, gave a sermon in the chapel the week before graduation. I was one of those. We don't have a lot of graduation ceremonies in Aotearoa. I consider it a blessing. But not in America. The first graduation is after finishing kindergarten, then middle school, and finally high school. Those of us who went to university would have another after completing our bachelor's. I had two more after achieving my graduate degrees. Under the circumstances, that is way too much pomp for one life. And of course, that does not include all those of my father, children, and grandchildren. As a band nerd, I was called on to play even if I or a family member was not graduating. Graduations everywhere in the U.S. were carefully scripted. Each ceremony began with the band playing the Edward Elgar composition we just heard Thuman play very well. Pomp and circumstance. Written the year our building was opened. Its title is from a line in Othello, "Pride, pomp, and circumstance of glorious war." Elgar did not write it for graduation, but for King Edward VII's coronation. In England, it was a song of conquest and empire. In 1905, Elgar received an honorary degree from Yale. His composition was played at the graduation. Princeton, the University of Chicago, and Columbia soon picked it up. It was soon ubiquitous. It just became the thing you had to graduate to, despite its jarring colonial and war-justifying theme. The band played it on repeat as the graduates marched in alpha order, two by two, into the venue and took their seats in front of the podium. That was not tours in a small school with a couple hundred students. But if there were 3,000 or more, my swollen tuba lips would need rehab before those students whose names began with Zed were seated. By now, some of you have astutely noticed I have carefully avoided giving my valedictory. In truth, I would rather not. It isn't because I'm not proud of my many achievements and recognitions over a long ministry that gave me joy and sustained me. It has been your accomplishments in the good times and bad times too that have made it all worthwhile. You are why I never wanted to do anything else. However, if I were forced to choose just one thing I'm proud of as a minister, I left 9 congregations and 1 diocese better off than when I came to them. And if I had to choose a second, it would be by swimming upstream to promote progressive religion. This morning, that includes not giving a traditional valedictory. Instead, I'd like to focus on the spiritual importance of a valedictory. Essentially, valediction is a fancy word rooted in Latin for saying farewell or goodbye. It's that simple. For most of us, saying goodbye is painful, something to be avoided. Yet it is a key to our humanity and connection. I feel incredibly human when I lose the right words to say goodbye to those I love. I wish it could be done under anesthesia. Yet the language must be found and spoken if you are to know how much my time with you has meant to me. The relationships I've established with you as I moved into a new metaphorical pew have been memorable and worthy of recognition and conclusion. Leaving without saying goodbye can mean that we feel unresolved and unable to have a sense of closure. We may experience all kinds of feelings concerning this. Perhaps we might even be left feeling guilty, regretful, grief-stricken, sad, angry, or remorseful. There will most likely be a sense of things being unfinished. Without an appropriate and healthy farewell, it can be hard to move on and get on with our lives if the relationship has been important to us. Words of farewell change us. They remind us of our sacred places, significant physical and audiovisual improvements. They embrace us in your good wishes at Rachel's and my wedding. We were the first faith community to support the living wage. Giving sanctuary to the Indian students was transformative. Pride walks supporting the LGBTQI community and the annual financial support of Rainbow Youth strengthened our identification as their allies. Quiz nights led by a capricious quizmas build up the community, as did our support of the Duffy Book Program, sending kids to camp, singing groups, supporting a dyslexia program in Tonga, car rallies, adult RE classes, finding tech solutions to keep worshiping when COVID locked us down, having small discussion groups at the close of tourism, greater focus on climate change and our response to it, honoring Te Tiriti O Waitangi when opportunities arise. This partial list of accomplishments created relationships between us. Not acknowledging them is denying what we have and had now and yesterday. For me, it's now. For you, it will be someday. When I look at that list, a high price would be paid to let pain silence my goodbye. While intellectually, I appreciate the need for words of farewell, that does not mean I look forward to saying them. Not that I have a choice, as my feelings are beyond reason. Having a life of their own, Shakespeare captures my sentiments. Good night. Good night. Parting is sweet sorrow. Then I shall say good night till it be morn. They can be intense and overwhelming. On a recent trip to the U.S., I spent time in person with my sister for the first time in 12 years. When the time came for our farewells, I was caught off guard by the sizable lump in my throat and flowing tears. I shouldn't have been surprised. Well, we have very different personalities. We have supported each other through thick and thin over the years. I look at such moments as part of our journey towards our final words, farewell. My father, to whom I was very close, died when I was 50. Yet a part of me still grieves. How is it the world can let it be a dance through the good times and bad times too, without noticing his absence? At such moments, W.H. Auden's "Stop All the Clocks, Cut Off the Telephone" make more sense to me. Stop all the clocks, cut off the telephone, prevent the dog from barking with a juicy bone. Silence the piano, and with muffled drum, bring out the coffin. Let the mourners come. The aeroplanes circle moaning overhead, scribbling on the sky the message, "He is dead." Put crepe bows around the white necks of the public doves. Let the traffic policemen wear black cotton gloves. He was my north, my south, my east and west, my working week and my Sunday rest, my noon, my midnight, my talk, my song, my thought that love would last forever. I was wrong. The stars are not wanted now. Put out everyone. Pack up the moon and dismantle the sun. Pour away the ocean. Sweep up the wood. For nothing now can ever come to any good. Yet even in the midst of such pain, such loss, we are given a gift of precious memories, of special moments that will emerge gradually to strengthen us and remain in our heart forever, carrying us forward. And that is my vow victory. David, would you extinguish the flame? We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again. So the question: what would you find most difficult in saying farewell? Would it be easier to say to some than others?